I felt so unworthy, so unloved. You know, to know that somebody could make that decision to try to end my life. As much as I knew God loved me, sometimes the pain in this world wears away at that, and that's where I was.
Expressing the deep emotions she experienced upon finding out she was an abortion survivor, that's our guest from our last Focus on the Family, Melissa Oden. Today, our hosts on the program are Focus President Jim Daly and psychologist Dr. Julie Slattery. I'm John Fuller, and Jim and Julie, last time we started an unforgettable story.
Yeah, John, it is. Melissa's life and testimony is a reminder of what a miracle life is and how the human body, especially a little baby, can survive so much. And Melissa's testimony is just that. To recap, Melissa survived a saline abortion. Her 19-year-old mother obtained an abortion or an attempted abortion, and she was approximately 31 weeks in gestation when that happened. Having survived that terrible trauma, she was born weighing less than 3 pounds. The clinic nurse took this little baby Melissa infant to a hospital. She noticed that she was still trying to hang on to life, little body movements and breath. And thank the Lord for that nurse who was paying attention and had to shift that gear from a moment of attempting to take the life of this preborn baby to saving the life of this now born baby. That to me is just a spiritual and emotional contradiction. I can't imagine what a hospital room would be like, Julie, in that case.
Just the emotions that come through there. And obviously, Melissa did survive. She's healthy and strong and was raised by a set of adoptive parents. And Melissa didn't discover the history of her birth until she was in an argument with her teen sister who had become pregnant. That revelation at the age of 14 opened up a spiritual search, a physical search for her biological parents that understandably took her through many twists and turns and some emotional hardship.
Melissa Oden is the founder and director of For Olivia's Sake, named after her 3-year-old daughter, an organization which raises awareness of the impact of abortion on men, women, children, families, and communities. She lives with her husband, Ryan, and their 3-year-old daughter, Olivia, in Sioux City, Iowa. Melissa, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
For those that didn't catch last time, just share with us again the emotion of learning about being a survivor of an abortion. You were adopted into a wonderful Christian family. You had a sister, as Julie said, that made you aware of this during a typical teen argument, and then it set you on a journey. Recap for us just that emotion of learning that.
It was so devastating that night. I'll never forget how long my mother sat and held me on the couch that night, and we just sobbed. You know, and those were sobs of pain, of anguish, but also very much of joy, you know, of knowing that I was saved from that certain death and that obviously there was a great plan and purpose for my life. But I struggled with fear. I struggled with anger. I struggled with sadness, despair, all of those things. And I think that's what people can relate to, even though my experience is so unique. We all go through times in our life where we think, oh, how am I going to get through this?
Mm. And your adoptive mother holding you on that couch, you were 14 years old at that point. 5 years later, when you're 19, you start the process of finding your biological parents. I guess you were in your late 20s then when you sent the letter to your father. You talked about that last time. The letter did arrive. You didn't know that until you saw his obituary Googling his name. You later learned that his family found your letter in his desk drawer, but you never were able to connect with him.
That's been very difficult for me. After all those years of searching and to almost have him literally in my own backyard and then to have him gone, that was a huge struggle for me. And that's, I think, where true faith comes in of knowing, okay, Lord, that is what I wanted, but that's not what the plan is. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it could have been any other way. I didn't know at the time, but his family never knew anything about me. They didn't know about the pregnancy. All they knew was that after 4 years of dating, my biological mother just stopped coming around. And the only thing my father ever said to anyone that now they can look at and understand what it means, He told his younger brothers he did something his sophomore year in college that he was deeply ashamed of, and he would never tell another living soul about. And literally, he made good on that promise. You know, my biological father passed away from this world carrying that secrecy and the shame and the pain of that abortion with him.
You know, so often we talk about the impact of abortion on women, and we have support groups for women. But what you just said there, I think, highlights that very often men are forgotten victims in this, that they carry the history of this choice into their marriages, into their fatherhood, and that sense of shame overshadows it all.
I meet men like my biological father every day who say one of two things. You know, either I was the one who played a part in the woman going to get that abortion. You know, I coerced her into doing it. Or, you know what, I simply walked away. I did not support her, and so she felt like that was the only decision that she could make. And now it's 20 years later, and I am struggling with what I've done and the children that I've lost as a result. And we have to start helping men. We have to start talking about the fact that men hurt too. It doesn't take away from the pain that women experience. You know, women's pain is deep too, but we have to start helping men heal and identify that pain.
Melissa, one of the things that catches my attention in this description of your relationship that you never really had with your father is that for many people, the Lord not allowing you to connect after you sent the letter, after you went to that emotional effort, you write the letter, it goes, you then see his obituary, you talk somehow to the family, they communicate to you that the letter was in his desk, it was read, but he had never responded. People could get very bitter about that to the Lord. How did you reconcile that? How did you, in your relationship with God, how did you accept that without feeling like, Lord, if you just would have given me 5 minutes, 10 minutes, why didn't you let me have that time? Did you go through that debate?
Absolutely. Initially, I did. You know, just thinking, how could this be your plan? You know, how could this be your plan? But I think those 10 years where I was looking for them and the struggles that I had and how much I learned about God and my relationship with him then, I know all of those years were preparation for what's happening now. And that includes the loss of my father. If those 10 years of struggles hadn't happened, I could have been bitter, I think. I think I could have really lacked the wisdom of understanding that God truly had a much greater plan. But I had the greatest sense of peace within minutes of finding out about his loss. Because I truly do believe so much that the Lord knows so much better for me than I know for myself.
How did you then turn your pursuit to your biological mother?
You know, all of those things were kind of happening at the same time. I always say, sometimes we see the Lord working in our lives and it almost blows you away because you can see it. And in 2007, I literally got my birth records. I found my biological parents. I started speaking publicly for the first time since high school speech class. That's so funny to say. And so it was in the midst of that that I also started trying to contact my mother's side of the family.
And what happened? Now, how did you try to make contact and what was the response?
I sent them a letter also. I had actually sent them a letter about a month after I sent one to my father. I do know who my biological mother is, but I've never been able to determine where she's living or what her married name is because after the abortion, she married someone else. But I found her parents, and so I reached out to them, and I said, you know, similar things that I said to my father. And the last thing I said was, could you please pass along my message of forgiveness to her so she knows?
So your mother has never attempted to respond to you to this day?
I've never heard from my biological mother. I did hear back from her parents, though, within just a few short days of sending that letter.
Now, in that context, if I understand the story correctly, your grandmother, your mother's mom, encouraged your mom to get the abortion.
Well, what I've gathered over the years, first of all, it was my grandfather who wrote me back. You know, in the letter, the only thing he said about the abortion is that he knew, I knew, my live birth was not her intention. You know, what I've learned over the years is that it was either one of my grandparents. You know, I think I know in my heart which one it is. But one of them certainly played a role in that coercion from what I've been led to believe. So that's difficult for me, but I also know that I'm sure they had the best of intentions, whoever it was, whether it was my grandparents or not. I'm sure that they felt like they were doing the right thing for my mother by having her get that abortion.
Melissa, I'm struck by, as you tell this story, your sense of God's sovereignty through all of it. You have not fought his plan. One piece of that, where I think a lot of people get stuck, is your part in forgiving. If we look at the history that you're talking about, there are many people to forgive. Your father, your mother, your grandparents. What was that journey like to truly get to the place where you could give this to the Lord?
I always say, looking back on it, it was easy. I can't even tell you when it was that I forgave them, because it was so long ago. And I meet people again every day who struggle with that, and people who are strong in their faith who struggle with forgiving people, because it can be hard. But for me, when I keep God at the forefront of my life and I keep Jesus on that cross at the forefront of my mind, then that makes it easy. You know what? Christ died for their sins as much as he died for mine. And I'm not their judge and I'm not their jury. That's easy for me. But it's a process. I forgive them over and over again. The birth of Olivia brought it all to the forefront again, because holding that little beautiful, vulnerable child made me feel anger again for the first time in many, many years. And so I forgave them all over again.
Did you find the irony that your baby Olivia was born in the same hospital that they tried to take your life?
I always say there's no coincidences in my life. I don't know about you. It's just the Lord working in miraculous ways. I can't believe it sometimes that I actually followed through with giving birth to Olivia at that hospital. We knew going in that that's where the abortion had taken place. We went there for a birthing class, and my husband and I both said, you know, let's just see. This may be too much for you emotionally, even though you've healed. Let's just see. And when we went for our birthing class, we sat there for hours, literally hours. We thought it might have been the snow. What ended up happening is they forgot to schedule someone to teach the class. So lo and behold, a woman shows up later and she says, hey, listen, I'm so sorry that you've been sitting here, but I'm going to make it worth your while because I've worked here since the mid-1970s. And I was itching in my seat. And I'm pretty sure my husband was itching in his, because he knew I was going to say something.
What happened?
I waited until lunchtime that day, and I walked up to the nurse and I said, I think you might know who I am. I said, I survived a failed abortion attempt here back in 1977. And the look on her face was just one of awe. And she started to cry. She said, of course, I know who you are. You look just like your grandmother. She had worked with my maternal grandmother. I didn't know it at the time. And so I knew that that was just God saying, it's going to be okay. Melissa and Ryan, this is where Olivia is to be born.
I can only imagine, Melissa, when you drive by that hospital today with your three-year-old daughter, you say, that's where you were born. And what was intended for death, God has turned into life.
And you can probably see that I'm sitting here with tears in my eyes, because that means the world to me. The Lord has redeemed that place. And he does those kind of great works every day. I think sometimes people miss it. But I want that for every woman. You know, I want every woman to be able to drive past a hospital or clinic and know that that's where her child was given life, not that that's where her child's life was terminated. I can't imagine how many women have to deal with that every day.
You said a minute ago, as you process this, that we have those moments in our lives and we walk past them. How do we know when that's occurring, when the Lord desires to redeem something that's so tragic or painful?
For me, it's about a lot of prayer. And not just prayer, but listening. Listening to what he is saying back to us. You know, for me, prayer is a conversation. I hear from people all the time who say, yeah, I keep praying, but I just don't hear anything. Well, are you truly listening? And if you've heard him, will you actually follow through with what he's asking you to do? Because it gets easy to not listen if it doesn't fit with what we have in our head. Like, you want me to do what, Lord? Oh, I'll just pretend I didn't hear that. And I'm going to move on with my life. And then I'm 20 years later going to wonder why I am in the position that I am. Mm. Because we need to slow down. Mm-hmm. We need to slow down and we need to listen. And then we need to be obedient. I can't imagine how different my life would be if I hadn't been obedient over the years. I am so blessed. And I truly believe it's because I've been obedient.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Focus on the Family, today's broadcast with Melissa Oden, a survivor of a saline abortion in 1977. Last time and today, we've talked about her journey. Melissa, we just touched on all that emotion of being a mom with a three-year-old daughter. Can you speak to the mom who maybe did make a choice for abortion and has never had that chance to hear from her son or daughter that she lost? Being that son or daughter that has survived, what do you think a mom should hear?
You know, I always want to help men and women know that, first of all, I love them. And their child loves them. You know, no matter what the circumstances surrounding my birth, I love my biological parents, whether they're here on this earth or in heaven. And I want other people to know how much I love them. And in many ways, I think I am representative of their child. You know, I hear from men and women every day who feel like they have to apologize to me. And I say, first of all, you don't have to apologize. You know, thank you, but you don't have to apologize to me. And I will be your child on this earth if that helps you heal. I wasn't prepared for that when I first started out on this journey. I thought, okay, Melissa, you're going to raise awareness about the preciousness of every human life and what God's plan is. And I never knew I would be helping people heal.
Melissa, you must have a deep sense of purpose. I mean, to have survived, to have had the journey and the pursuit that you've had, you must have felt the hand of God saying, you're special. I've got a job for you to do.
I always say, I think I have it easy. You know, people say all the time, how do you know what your purpose or your plan is? For me, that was made glaringly clear, at least in the right arena that I'm supposed to work in. But I want everybody to understand that each of us are special. Each of us are loved by God, and each of us have a calling and a gift. This is just the particular gift and calling that He gave me. You know, people can look at me and think that I'm so special, but I want everybody to understand that each and every one of us are equally special in His eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Just as the Lord has a plan for us and He has a plan for you, the enemy is always looking for ways to distract us, to discourage us. And you talked last time about the shame associated with how you came to be here. And that shame is probably unique in your circumstances. Not many people can identify with being a failed abortion, but many people identify with that shame that keeps them from God's calling. The enemy will whisper in their ear, you're not good enough, you can't do this, no one loves you. How, through your journey of getting past that shame, would you encourage the person who is struggling with that right now?
You know, first of all, we know that Scripture tells us that once we ask for forgiveness, it is done. It is done. I think I was reading Hebrews last night, and essentially it says that He forgets. But yet we don't forget on this earth, or more likely it's about the evil one trying to make sure that we don't forget, because that chains people and ties them down. And so I would encourage people to really take a look at where that's coming from. That's not God.
The enemy is called the accuser.
Yeah, that is not God who is intending to make us feel guilt after we've sought out that forgiveness. And so people need to determine where that's coming from and truly step back into their faith. And again, I think for me, it's a lot about prayer. You will learn things in conversations with God that shed light on the truth of things. And trust me, this is spiritual warfare. I face it every day.
What kind of resistance did you find? Do you have people that don't want to believe you, don't want to acknowledge you, because you're such an enigma to their movement?
Absolutely. You know, that first time was pretty safe. I had a lot of supporters around me, but I was so scared. You know, I always joke, I can do all things through Him, but there are times when you go, really? But I did it. And I proceeded throughout my pregnancy, because I was just a few days pregnant that first time I spoke publicly on Capitol Hill, and I started to travel across the United States and Canada, mainly on college campuses, sharing my story and really advocating for people to take a look at their campuses and see what the obstacles were to women choosing life. Because we know that, university is a huge obstacle, and they're not family friendly. And it was there that I really started to get my first taste of resistance. I had a group of women on a college campus in Canada who heckled me, who tried to disrupt the entire speech, and actually got up and walked out in the middle of it. And instead of doing so quietly, one of them started to clap, and she turned to everyone in the audience and she said, "Bravo, nice performance. You know that none of this is real, don't you?"
Was she discrediting your story altogether?
Certainly,
or the values
to,
that you were espousing because of it?
No, certainly trying to discredit that I was not real. You know, and I hear that from time to time. I'll have people, and nobody typically will say it to my face. But on the internet, people will say things like, "Have you looked at her? She looks perfectly normal. You know her story can't be real. She must be the woman who had an abortion. She can't be a child who survived." And those things at first hurt me. But I know that none of that is really about me. That's about people's own defensiveness. That's about their own pain of what they've gone through. And certainly I know that when people look at me and they know how many children have lost their lives to abortion, it's hard to believe that somebody like me really does exist.
You're a miracle. And if we don't believe in a God who can do miracles, you shouldn't be here.
Melissa, as we near the end here, talk about your ongoing ministry. With Olivia's sake, what are you trying to do, and what all do you do?
You know, not long after Olivia was born, I figured it all out. And you'll see a quote on my website, and it says, "One decision, one single moment, can have such a detrimental impact on so many people, living and dead, born and yet to be conceived." That's what the Lord laid on my heart one night when I was rocking her. And I thought, that's it. That's truly it. I am just the messenger, and I am just one of many that's been touched by abortion. You know, certainly all of those children who lose their lives are victims, but, you know, we have generation upon generation lost. And so that's what my ministry is truly about, is talking about the ripple effect of abortion across generations and really allowing us to have conversations about how everyone in a family is impacted, and ultimately communities in our entire world.
Melissa, your biological mother doesn't know the full story, and you don't know that she may hear this or may come across something that you've written or spoken about. What would you say to her? Can we hear that opening comment that you might make to her?
You know, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for you that you were put in that position, that you had to try to end my life. I can't imagine. I just can't imagine what that was like. And to live all these years silently with pain and guilt and regret, I forgive you. I forgive you over and over again. And I just pray, that you've asked for forgiveness, because I know the Lord will grant it to you. And I really, you know, of course I know that his will be done, but in my heart I just pray that someday I have the chance to meet you face to face.
That's beautifully said. And Melissa, we surely hope that that day comes for you and your biological mom, that you will be able to talk with her. Melissa Oden, survivor of an abortion, mother of three-year-old Olivia, president of Olivia's Sake, trying to get the message out that life is the better choice. Thank you for being with us on Focus on the Family.
Thank you so much.
And for those that support the ministry here, can I just give you a quick update? We do quite a bit to help in this area of life. One of the things that we do is to place ultrasound machines in pregnancy medical clinics. We fund about 80% of the cost of the machine. I think we've placed over 500 machines at this point, and we estimate that about 90,000 babies have been saved through that effort. So first, I want to thank you for helping us in doing exactly that, saving these lives, and to ask you to consider to continue to help us. In addition to that, we have the Orphan Care Initiative here at Focus on the Family. We call it Wait No More, to help place children in Christian homes, just like what happened to Melissa. Consider that. Maybe you're not in a spot where adoption would be right for you. But come alongside those in the church that have adopted. Find a way to encourage them or consider adopting yourself. It is an incredible opportunity, and you heard it in Melissa's voice, the love that she has for her adoptive parents.
Mm. And just one more thing, Jim, as we wrap up today's program, is Focus on the Family is committed not just to defending the life of the unborn, but to reaching out to those who have been so wounded by abortion. Mm-hmm. And I can just imagine that you might be listening and Melissa's story has impacted you. It has brought up memories. It has brought up shame and grief. We want to be here to help you. And that's why we have counselors who would love to talk to you and help you on that healing process.
And to get in touch with one of those counselors, just give us a call here during business hours and leave your contact information, and they'll get back to you just as soon as possible. Now, resources related to today's conversation include the DVD documentary about Melissa's life called A Voice for Life. And then the previous broadcast guest, Abby Johnson, has quite a compelling story as well of leaving her job at Planned Parenthood. And you can find her story in a book or DVD called Unplanned. Of course, we have audio CDs of our conversations here, and you can find information on all of these and about our counselors when you call 800, the letter A, and the word family, or when you stop by focusonthefamily.com/radio. By the way, later today, Melissa is going to be a guest on Your Family Live, our weekly webcast. That's from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern. You can watch and participate live or find the archive version there at the site. And when you get in touch, please consider a gift to the work of Focus on the Family. We're all about helping families thrive and reaching out and offering assistance and love to those who have a point of need. And we really need your participation in that outreach, so please consider a gift of any amount today. You can make that gift online, over the phone, or just drop a check in the mail. And our address here is simply Colorado Springs, Colorado, 80995. Our program today was provided by Focus on the Family. And on behalf of Jim Daly, Dr. Julie Slattery, and our entire team, thanks for listening in. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back next time when we'll hear some advice for parents of a strong-willed child and once again turn our hearts toward home.